tuned into the greatest.
You are now tuned into the greatest.
Oh my God.
It's the Fearless Podcast with Arian Simone.
Hello.
Cam.
Hey. I'm good. How are you?
I'm absolutely excellent. Well, welcome to the Fearless Podcast.
I'm so excited. Happy to be here. Looking forward to it.
Yes. Well, let me say this. We're going to let this be like a casual talk, like as if we're in our house, just in the living room chatting. But what I want to take advantage of is the fact that season 3 is our entrepreneurship series.
Okay.
And so many people have so many questions about venture in my audience now after they saw what I've gotten into. And they were like, okay, can you break this down? Can you explain stuff? You know what? There's nobody better than Kim Sills to give like the one-on-one ABC of what all of venture capital is and investing from a business side. So Kim Sills with the Jump Fund, and you can share right now what the Jump Fund does.
Sure. Well, so happy to do it and happy to join you. I think this is such a great conversation to make sure that all of our entrepreneurs out there really think about all the different options they have. And that's really one of our goals with the Jump Fund. We started this back in 2013. We had a goal of making the Southeast the best place for a woman to start her business, to fund her business, and for women to invest in other women. So we really had some pretty big goals, but we thought we could accomplish them. And part of that was about educating women about this space, about what it means to be an investor in these type of early stage ventures, and how they can put their money to work. And then educating women that there are ways to get the capital you need to grow and scale your business that don't involve you going into personal debt. So we wanted to take it from both sides of the equation and really just improve the way that women were thinking about entrepreneurship in the Southeast. So we've been doing that since 2013. We are currently deploying capital out of our second fund, Jump Fund 2. And in total across the two funds, we've invested in 28 businesses and one fund, the Fearless Fund, which we're so thrilled to be a part of with you. And really, we think that your mission aligns very closely with ours. And so we were happy to come in as one of your limited partners. And, you know, so that's in a nutshell, we invest across all industries. So I get that question a lot where people say, do you have a specific focus? We invest in companies that are ready to scale and grow. So we have some pretty standard criteria around early stage investing and what we look for in a company. But the big thing is it's typically tech enabled, ready to scale, needs that capital to help them on a journey that we'd like to see them in at least a company worth about $25 million in that first 3 to 5 years that we're investing in them.
Excellent. And that definitely gives a breakdown, of course, what the Jump Fund does. One thing that you said that I want to hone in on, and I think it's so important, you said we wanted to basically educate people about there's a way to get your company invested in without you having to go into personal debt. That's so important because so many people do go into personal debt as it pertains to their own businesses. Mm-hmm. They don't realize that there's other options out there outside of them having to sign off on a personal loan.
Right, right.
Now, so, mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that there are several ways to do it. Like, for example, if you're a product business and you get a purchase order and you need the capital in order to fulfill that purchase order or to produce that inventory, a lot of times you can get into what's known as factoring, where you go to great organizations that will help you advance you the capital you need to deliver on that purchase order, and they take a percentage of what that purchase order is worth. So you get that capital up front. So that's an example where you're not giving away equity in your business. You're not going into personal debt. You're leveraging a signed contract that you already have that you just need some capital to help deliver on. So, you know, that's one example. We really encourage folks to go back to the universities from where they might have graduated or attended school, because many of them have grant programs or other types of endeavors out there to support their alum as they look to start businesses. So that's another way. You know, many times there are grants in the, whatever industry you're in, if you're in a life sciences industry or energy or things like that, you know, you can look for state and federal grants sometimes that again are non-dilutive ways. And when I say non-dilutive, I mean you're not going into personal debt and you are not giving up equity in your company. So, you know, ways that you can retain ownership. But then when you're ready to take on an outside investor who's going to want to then take some ownership of your company, that's when you get into the angel investing world, the micro venture capital world. We at Jump Fund are considered to be a micro VC, a micro venture capitalist, because of the check sizes we write, which are typically range anywhere from $150,000 to $250,000 in terms of a first-time check. And then we'll invest with you along the way. The single biggest investment we've typically made has been a little over $400,000 in any one company. But we will look to not only make that initial investment, but perhaps participate in follow-on rounds to help that company grow and scale before they're ready to get to the big check writers, those folks that write million-dollar checks and beyond.
Yeah, so explain to the audience pretty much how a fund works. Explain what a carry is. Explain just like the ABCs, the 101, so the audience is truly educated on what is going on in the space.
Sure. So when we say a fund, what that means is that we have a group of limited partners. In our case, it's somewhere between 65 and 75 limited partners who have committed capital to us, their own money to us, and said, we want you to invest this money on our behalf according to your investment thesis, right? And our investment thesis at the Jump Fund is that to even be considered, you must have at least one woman on your leadership team in a significant role that has influence on the direction of the company. And that woman must have equity in the company on par with the men. So we are looking for gender diverse leadership teams. And then we're looking, as I said before, for companies where our capital can help them grow, scale their business. So our limited partners have all committed capital to us that they've said, we'll give you capital as you need it to invest. So they've signed, you know, contracts and all that. So we're guaranteed that we know the size of our fund. And we have a general partner team that I'm one of the members of that makes the investing decisions on behalf of all of our limited partners. So we're the ones that are identifying companies in our pipeline, assessing them for investment, doing the due diligence. We do engage our limited partners as we need their expertise, or many of our limited partners have actually referred companies to us and said, hey, can you take a look at this company? Does it make sense? Take a look and evaluate it against your investment criteria. And then we've also brought them in to help with due diligence. Our limited partners are in the medical profession, they're in the energy profession, they're technologists themselves. So we're really blessed to have a really wide variety of folks on our limited partner team, mostly women. It's about 95% women who are investors in our fund. And so we'll from time to time invite them to hear pitches with us. We'll invite them to be on our due diligence team because we want to leverage their expertise where they have it in these industries where we're evaluating these companies. So, but because we are a fund, the actual decisions get made within the general partner group. And we, as a general partner group, only get paid when the companies exit. Right. So we aren't getting paid up front by our limited partners. We have what you referred to earlier as that GP carry or general partner carry, where once a company exits and we all make money on that successful exit, then there's a portion of that money that's carved out to pay the general partners for the work that they did. And it's typically no more than 20% of the profit of the deal. Right. So at first, the first thing we do when we get a check for a company of ours exiting is we return the capital back to everybody who invested. Then we typically give them some type of preferred rate of return. And then the balance is what gets split 80-20 between the limited partners and the general partners, where the general partners are taking their share on the back end. So we are invested in the mutual success of all of our LPs. And we're typically LPs ourselves, so we have our personal money in the fund, and then we're also general partners making the decision. So does that make sense? Is that pretty clear in terms of how that plays out?
No, it will. I know it makes complete sense to me. But of course, I just want, I know when I first sat down with you guys, Kim is just a wealth of resources and she's so generous. And she's like, hey, whatever you want to know and whatever you need in this capacity with you trying to embark on this and now have embarked on this, she's like, I'm here. So I wanted them to hear from somebody who I knew personally can break this down like ABC 123 for them.
Sure, sure. Now, and by the way, I'm happy to help you because, you know, I got that same help when I joined into this industry for the first time about 6 years ago when I was getting involved. And there were folks who were basically very generous with me. So I'm happy to pay it forward and say, what have I learned over the last 6 years and how might that help anybody who's thinking about getting involved in this type of investing?
That is wonderful. That is one. And I look forward to paying it forward to the next. So that is definitely wonderful. And just having females and women relationships that are just so reciprocal and for people to see that, you know, everybody's just in this thing together, you know, and everybody wants to win together.
Right.
That's so important.
Right.
Now, question. This is a question we ask actually all of our guests. I would pretty much say, is this something that you knew that you would be doing later on in life? Like when you were a child, what was your dream?
Well, first of all, no, I really sort of stumbled into this by accident, if you will, where I was looking at ways to diversify my investment strategy. I knew some people who had invested in startups and I thought, you know, this seemed like a good thing to do at the time. I had a long-term, pretty successful career in human resources and most currently as an HR consultant and wanted to think differently about how I was investing some of my money and maybe a little bit more riskier side of life. So it was not a planned thing. It was more opportunistic where I had a great opportunity to start as a writing checks myself before I then evolved into this role where I was helping to make the decisions on how we actually deploy the capital in our fund. So, you know, when I was young and even now I'll say, Erin, I'm kind of a bit of a different animal in that I don't have it all mapped out. I look for things that are interesting and exciting and keep me engaged and that I can get passionate about. And that's the way I drove my career. And it's the way I'm driving this stage of my life now where I'm not working in a corporate role full time, but really working in this startup community. And I enjoyed it when I first started doing it. And more I got to experience sitting with entrepreneurs, helping them tackle some of their challenges, think about funding, the more I was just like, this is what I really want to do. So fell into it, loved it, but never really had a roadmap like that.
I love something that you were just vulnerable about and admitted in all transparency, which was that you don't have it all figured out and you look for things in that moment that you will be passionate about. I think that will give some comfort to people who are just like, oh my gosh, they have it all figured out. And you're like, no, that's not how I'd approach life. No, seriously.
Yeah.
I think it's a great philosophy to say, I'm living for today and I'm living for what I'm passionate about and where my purpose is in alignment with, and this is what I'm doing.
Right,
and
right.
There's something to be said about that. Do you even remember when you were a child what you may have dreamed of?
You know, I don't, because I don't know that it was anything all that specific. I mean, honestly, I got my degree in psychology back when I was in college thinking I'd go to law school. And I just couldn't be further from that right now. Right. Because I got into school and realized I didn't really like school. College enough to really stick it out for law school, but psychology was such a foundational degree that could really point me in many different directions. And then I came out of college and I got a job through a temp agency just to go out and get some work and start to develop those professional sets of experiences that help you later in life. And I was literally a temporary receptionist at a company in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where I grew up, and the HR person quit. And I was like, I think I could do that job. And I was looking to get on full time somewhere. So I went into the owner of the company and I said, you know, I'd love to give it a shot to replace this person that just left. And didn't know anything about HR, didn't have a background in anything other. I was probably 3 months out of college. And of course, I thought I knew everything being 3 months out of college. So I was like, sure, how hard can this be? and the guy gave me a chance and said, Sure. Yeah. And it just sort of started me on this career in HR from there. And from there, went into talent and leadership type roles, and has been a great background for me now with what I do, because I spend a lot of time coaching our entrepreneurs on their people strategies for their businesses, and how they think about each hire they make as such a strategic hire when you're when you have a startup. So how could I help them with the knowledge that I had in HR? And it's not a traditional background for somebody in these venture capital and angel investing roles. They're typically more finance minded folks. And so I've had to learn and get some training on that aspect of it. But really, honestly, my career has been opportunistic, and then what drives me, what am I passionate about? And I don't have a master plan. I wish I was sometimes, you know, maybe a little more thoughtful about that, but I can't say I've regretted any of the different detours I've taken along the way to get where I am today. I feel like I'm where I'm supposed to be.
Yes. And you are. And I think that's so awesome. I think that's definitely awesome. And I can't believe you said you thought you were going to go to law school. But
yes, I did. I don't know why I thought that, but I did. It didn't last long, Arian. It was a very fleeting dream.
Yeah, you never got there. She said it didn't last long. Like, you never got there. But it was so crazy. Your steps have just truly been ordered, and that you were supposed to be in this place. And an HR background, like you said, is not common in venture, but that's the one piece that I would say so many people that are entrepreneurs and doing startups need. They need to know how to build a team.
They do, and how to establish a culture. What's the culture they want for their company? They've got to think about, when's the right time to add on these additional resources? What are the skills and capabilities they need to be building in a team that complement the skills and capabilities they have? So it really has been a nice fit for us. On our GP team, for me to have that background, it complements the backgrounds of the rest of our GPs that are very diverse. So we bring a pretty well-rounded team to the table. And I think our entrepreneurs are excited to have that HR capability, because they're not going to hire an HR person at this stage of their company. So they need to get that advice from somewhere.
Yes, most definitely. And people, when you're starting a company off, you need as much C-suite level advice as possible, even though you may not be able to, of course, hire people with that level of expertise. I think this is just so awesome. Now, I know how many GPs you have, but how many are in the fund?
We have seven in the Jump Fund. We have seven. And we have, myself in more traditional HR and talent, we have one of our other GPs that's in leadership and leadership development. We have one who's got a focus on real estate. We have another who's a private wealth fund manager. We have someone else who's in the education space. So, you know, again, just a really diverse background with the ladies on our GP team. But I'm not sure if I mentioned all seven women. So that's also pretty unusual to have women, a complete team of women running a fund like we do. So, you know, I think we're breaking a lot of barriers and busting a few myths along the way. So we're happy to do it.
Yes, it's definitely groundbreaking, especially with the statistics in this industry. So it's definitely groundbreaking. With the entrepreneurs that you guys see, are there certain qualities that are not on paper that you're looking for? Not the investment criteria, but the qualities in the person.
Sure. And I think what would be important to say up front is that a lot of times the tipping point for whether or not we make an investment is the founding team. And we're looking at the founders, we're looking at the team they've assembled, and that will be our tipping point many, many times about, are we going to do this? Are we going to make an investment? And we're looking for entrepreneurs who are resilient, who are coachable, who are thoughtful about the areas in which they are looking to grow this business. We know that we're investing very early stage, which means that there's likely going to be a pivot or some type of change in direction, or maybe some unexpected, unintended type things that happen along the way. So we want to see a leadership team and a founder that's very resilient in that area and is willing to make that pivot with some coaching that would come their way. So we look at those kinds of things. We look at business acumen. It's so important because we know that there's a lot of people out there that have great ideas. There's a smaller subset of those people who can then turn that idea into a business that can grow. And, you know, so we think about, what does it mean to be a founder in the beginning? And then what does it mean to evolve into a CEO as your company grows? And then when might you have the presence to know I'm not the right person to be the CEO, perhaps, for the entire life cycle of this business. So at some point, I might need to bring somebody in to be the CEO while I'm the, you know, chief technology officer, or I'm this, you know, a strategy person. Or in one case, we had one of our CEOs who brought in a CEO based on where they were taking the company, and she took the role as chairman of the board. And that was the best role for her. So, you know, we've had some of our founders that have evolved into to CEOs and done really well. And then some that have said, I don't want to be the CEO long-term. I'm the head of this company for now, and then I'm going to bring in the right talent and my role will evolve. So we like to look at that kind of thing and say, is this a person that we can grow this business with? We say all the time that our investment is the marriage and the divorce all in one piece of paper. Because we're talking to you about what this is going to be as an investment, and we're going to talk to you about what it's going to be as an exit. And what that means for us is we're planning for the divorce now. So, you know, think that's a pretty complicated relationship. And, you know, we're going to be around in this relationship for years. Let's make sure it's a good fit for both sides.
That is so true. And what is also so true is, like you said, that CEO role, it evolves and it changes. Mm-hmm. So often in the beginning stages, you know, you may be, it's so creative. You're developing products if it's on the product side. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're managing people.
Right.
And you're like, whoa, wait a minute. This is not what I signed up for.
You're also managing vendors. You're managing commercial relationships. You're negotiating contracts. You're setting pricing. You know, so there's a lot of things that you may not be the one best suited to do over time. And you've got to surround yourself with people that can help you with those aspects of it. But at all times, the founder should know their number, should understand their business. So please don't mistake that. You know, that's a critical competency around business acumen. But also knowing that there are other people who might be better suited to serve certain roles on your leadership team.
That is so true. And I have a girlfriend. She definitely stepped down too. And she's like, I'll be the chairman. and I said, you stepped down. And she said, oh, Arian, we're going to call it a step up. I said, okay, I'm here for it.
Yes, exactly.
Yes,
I think that's the right way to look at it. And those are the types of intangibles we look at when we're evaluating the founders of these companies. Are these the people that can grow and take this business to where we want it to be?
Beautiful. Now, professionally or even personally, Kim, who you've mentioned about, of course, people paving the way for you and you paying it forward. Who are some of your mentors? And this could be like professionally or personally, or this could be somebody you're reading or listening to their podcast.
Well, so one of the people that I was listening to, I've been listening to her podcast from the beginning, is a lady named Joanne Wilson, who is known as the Gotham Gal. And she was one of, her podcast was one of the first ones I started listening to in this angel investing venture capital space. She interviewed a lot of folks who helped me understand how to tackle this, both men and women, who are either investors or they're entrepreneurs, and really gave me a view from both sides. So that's the Gotham Gal. Another podcast I absolutely love is How I Built This.
I love that too.
NPR. It's such a great podcast. You know, Sarah Blakely, I think, was the first guest they ever had on that podcast. And I just, you know, we talked about earlier how much fun it is to hear the stories about why people started their business, what drives them, what are they passionate about. And that podcast is a great example of how in the world did this company come to be? How did they even know this was a problem they wanted to tackle? And really, then how did the company evolve? So I love that, How I Built This. And, you know, there are a few that I listen to as well that are derivatives of this topic, right? So, for example, there's one out there called Sports Like a Boss. And what I like about that one is it really talks about how sports sometimes pave the way into these leadership roles, or help, you know, the things you learn by playing sports and being involved in sports. And what does that teach you later on about leadership, about team building? You know, so that's a one that I enjoy listening to. And also, we're seeing more and more sports professionals get into this venture capital and investing space. So it's mm-hmm. interesting to see how they're thinking about their background in sports and how it's helped them create better leaders. So that's one, a relatively new one that I've started listening to. They've had some great guests on that one that have been fascinating, like Robin Roberts and several Olympic athletes, which, you know, as you know, that's such a amount of dedication and perseverance to the sport. So it's interesting to see how they think that those experiences have helped them later on.
That is so true. And about more athletes getting involved in the space, where do you see the venture space going and growing?
Well, I think that right now, I think we're all looking at the broader economic trends that are going on and saying, where should we be placing our bets? So, you know, if there's any type of market correction coming, what does that look like? And where are the industries that are recession-proof, if you will? So where should we be thinking about that? How will any upcoming economic trends or forecasts affect acquisitions, right? So we ultimately want our companies to be acquired and go on to make all of us a lot of money, the founding teams and the investors. And so we're constantly thinking about how that might play out. So we have recently been talking to several folks that are in the corporate strategy section of big companies that do make acquisitions and really trying to understand their mindsets right now about, you know, where will they spend capital on acquiring. But, you know, the other thing to know is that companies are taking longer to exit. And that's a good thing for the companies. It may really force investors to take a look at the time horizon of where they're placing their money. But because there's more access to capital than there has been in the past, what we're seeing are these entrepreneurs that are taking more time before they get to an exit, creating bigger valuations for their companies. So used to be when you would make these investments, you'd think, oh, well, I wonder if they could exit in 3 to 5 years. What's their exit strategy? Now you're more thinking 5 to 8 to 9 years, like, you know, a longer time horizon before they would potentially be ready to exit.
That is so true. On the investing side, though, now that we see more women getting into the space, what do you think that's going to look like, the future of venture on the investing side?
We are definitely seeing that more women are getting into decision-making roles. And by that, we mean actually voting and having a say in where the checks are written. And we think that that is producing more diverse teams that are being invested in, which the data out there shows us that companies that have just one woman on their leadership team are outperforming all male-led leadership team. So there's a financial ROI on this where, you know, we really are seeing that to be important. And the data is also showing that if there's at least one woman decision maker on the VC teams, they're more likely to be investing in these gender diverse teams as well. So we're seeing, you know, so most women that are involved in early stage investing are on the angel side or on the micro VC side. But where we're starting to see progress is on women getting into these decision-making roles at the big venture capital firms, at the private equity firms, where bigger checks are being written. And again, helping to see that that diversity of the money and where it's going.
That is so true. Now, my last question is, because I know everybody's probably listened to all this and they're like, well, I'm trying to get in on the jump fund. So that's probably what everybody's thinking right now. So sure. With that being said, how do people apply to the jump fund?
So the first step is to attend one of our office hour sessions and get to know us, right? We very rarely write checks into companies where we have not met and started to form some basis of a relationship with that founder. So the first step on that is office hours. So if you go out onto our website at thejumpfund.com and take a look and see when we're hosting office hours, they're virtual. And you can do it in person, you can do it virtually, and we'll have a meeting with you and we will get to know you a bit, talk a bit about your company, and then we invite you to apply. So you can't just apply blindly. There's got to be some referral into the application process. The other way to do it is to get an introduction to us through somebody we know, right? So we do a lot of co-investing because that's important, and we want to help our entrepreneurs get a number of investors to the table to put money in their companies. And we are the same way. We'll take referrals from some of our peers in the space. So if you know people that know us, feel free to leverage that. I think LinkedIn can be your best friend. All of our general partners are listed on our website. So you can go out to our website. You can see who our team is. Then you can do your homework and say, who do I know that knows these ladies and how can I get an introduction? But that's the bottom line is we take our applications via some type of warm intro process and not just let me go out onto the website and apply, even though they don't know me at all. So you've got to find a way to get to know us. And we try to make it easy with office hours. And again, we stay pretty well connected out there in the industry. We're constantly at pitch events. So if you're going to be at a pitch event and we're going to be there too, feel free to, you know, send us a message on LinkedIn or pop us a note over through the website. Let us know that you'll be at that conference pitching, and we'll make sure that we do everything we can to see you pitch at the event. So we love those pitch contests. We love those types of events where we can get to know a lot of companies in one setting.
I think that is so awesome that that's the approach that you guys take. I would love to adopt that. I'm just not trying to figure out how I would do that from a capacity standpoint.
Well, that's what a lot of people say, well, why do you have 7 general partners? Well, that's why we like to spread ourselves around. And so when we have conferences that are out there, like we just had several of our companies pitch at Venture Atlanta. And there were some other companies that pitched that we didn't know before. And so we had a few of our general partners at Venture Atlanta. And there were at least 2 or 3 companies that we met there that we've invited them to apply. So we're excited to be at these conferences. We do spread out. I know you have a smaller general partner team than we do. So that does make it a little tougher. And you have to be really thoughtful about how you spend your time. But it's a great way to get into one of these conferences and see it. For example, I go back to Venture Atlanta, there were at least 35 companies on the stage pitching. So where else can you go spend 2 days and meet 35 new companies?
Yes. And I love how you guys have office hours. I know a lot of the big VC companies, they're not even reachable.
right.
Not in that fashion.
No. And most of them will tell you they take referrals from people like us. Right. So they'll look to us to refer good companies to them that they should be considering for funding.
That is so true. That is so true. Because many people have reached out, of course, to see what's in the pipeline and who's applied. That is so true. Well, thank you so much, Kim. If there's any last words that you would just like them to know about or encourage them about becoming an investor themselves and getting in on this space would be great. But you've done excellent by explaining this, you know, in 1-3 ABC, 101 VC terms. This has been wonderful.
Yeah, I would refer people to the Angel Capital Association. They've got a great website that will help both entrepreneurs and potential investors think about this space. And if you're an entrepreneur looking for funding, they've got lists of resources you can talk to for funding. And then if you're thinking about becoming an investor yourself, an angel investor, or getting involved in an angel or micro venture capital fund, they've got information there as well. So I'm a big fan of the Angel Capital Association website, and the insights and the knowledge that they pass along to the community in general.
Well, thank you so much. This has been a wealth of knowledge. I know everybody's going to be writing in just with complete gratitude.
Well, always happy to chat with you, Erin. It's always fun. And if there are questions that end up coming online, just let me know. We could do a follow-up maybe of our FAQs that we get off of this one.
Wonderful. I think that would be awesome. I think that would definitely be awesome. Well, thank you so much again, Kim, and I will talk with you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to the Fearless Podcast with Erin Simone. Subscribe to the podcast and leave a 5-star review.